It's Great Mondays Radio. I'm Josh Levine, your host, founder of Great Mondays. We help executives from hypergrowth technology and social enterprise organizations build cultures that attract, engage, and retain top talent. If you'd like to be a guest on our program, hang out for about 20 minutes and I'll tell you how. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Great Mondays Radio. It feels like there is one prevalent emotion that is coursing through all of us at any given time these days, and that is anger. And so I have asked on psychologist and anger researcher Ryan Martin to come and talk to us about this misunderstood and potentially challenging emotional state. He's known as the anger professor, and he is a dean psychologist and anger researcher at the University of Wisconsin Green Bay, and his new book is out now, Emotion Hacks. Ryan Martin, I'm so pissed. What's happened, man? What do I do? Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It's great to have a chance to sit down and talk to you.
So let's start with your new book, Emotion Hacks. What was the sort of impetus? What did you think about writing this book now? You have two others, just to be clear. You have How to Deal with Angry People and Why We Get Mad. So now we're on to Emotion Hacks. We'll get into anger, but talk to me about what inspired this book.
Yeah, so it actually dovetails nicely with the anger stuff that some people may remember a trend on social media for a long time or for a while was, hey, as a so-and-so, here are four things I would never do. And then people would describe things they would never do. So I did one of those reels and said, here are four things as an anger researcher, here are four things I would never do. And one of those four things was exercise while angry as a way of dealing with my anger. Hmm. And this, I knew this would be, it's not actually controversial, but it is an unpopular opinion. There's a lot of people who think, no, this is what's good for me. We can get into why it's not actually good for you in a moment. But what was really interesting was I read through the responses and I made a lot of people mad, right? And so they're criticizing me, telling me I'm wrong, arguing with me. But one person said, if exercise doesn't work, then I'm out of options. And it honestly, it made me kind of sad. It made me really sad, right? There was this hopelessness in the tone of this person who felt like this is the one thing I've got and now you've taken it from me. And yeah. I didn't like feeling that way. And the other piece here is I understand that this person felt like they were out of options, but the truth is that when it comes to managing our emotions, there are so many options. And so I decided to frame that conversation on social media motivated me to frame a book really around, hey, here are 50 options, right? Here are 50 ways that you can manage your emotions, some of which are going to be maybe a little bit unexpected, some of which you maybe know you should do, but didn't like a healthy diet, right? You know you should have a healthy diet, but you didn't necessarily know how it affects your emotional well-being. Or that you should spend time in nature, that nature is good for you, but you didn't necessarily know how that connected to emotional wellness.
Okay. So the book is really kind of laying out the logic behind or the science behind why these things, these hacks, as you put them, are actually a useful way to cope. Is cope the right word?
Some of it's about coping. Some of it is about being strategic. So it's the science of essentially what I do is I lay out in the first chapter, here's why we feel things, right? And it's a combination, and this connects very specifically to the anger conversation we're going to have today too. There's a provocation or some sort of stimulus, something that you're responding to. Mm-hmm. There's your mood at the time of that provocation. There's how you think about the provocation, so your appraisal or your interpretation. Then there's the feeling itself, and then there's the behaviors that you engage in once you're feeling that way. So, I get cut off while driving. Or you know what? We'll bring it to a work example. I'm at work and a colleague doesn't do something that they said they would do, and I get angry, right? So the provocation is them not doing the thing they said they would do. My mood at the time, maybe I'm exhausted, maybe I'm stressed. Who knows, right? I've got a lot going on, so I'm feeling all those things. So that's my mood at the time. Then there's also my interpretation of that provocation. So that includes maybe some judgment of that person. They never do things the way they're supposed to. They're always late. They did this just to mess with me. This is
Lazy.
catastrophic, lazy, all those things.
Yep.
Then there's the feeling, which in this case is anger. And then there's what I do next, right? Which is I fire off an angry email, or I barge into their office and I yell at them, or I go to my boss and I complain about them, or all these different possibilities. So what the book is about is we can actually intervene in all of those different spots I mentioned. We can take better care of ourselves so that we, when we experience a provocation, we're better able to deal with it. We can think about our thoughts, think about how we're judging people. We can try and cope in the moment when we're experiencing it. We can take deep breaths. We can do those things that we're often told to do. And we can channel our emotions into umpteen different ways. So what the book is about is like, okay, so here are some science-backed strategies at each of those different points that will work in helping you manage your emotions, experience them differently, express them differently, and feel them differently.
Yesterday I had and it's a kind of a repeating situation that I'm trying to poke my way through, right? And I continue going back to, and I don't have this model, but maybe now that we've talked, I can. But I think, okay, this isn't about me is one piece where I try to diffuse it. And I also think the one piece that as I've gotten older that I've gotten better at is having empathy for the other person, and there's that like assume best intentions, but which isn't quite right, but it's like this person is probably under a lot of stress. I don't know. There's all sorts of things going on. It helps me, and I'll say cope with those kind of frightening experiences where you think, and let's go with the car cutting you off example, right? And then the classic is, I'm going to imagine that this person's spouse or grandmother is in the hospital. And you'll never know if that's true or not, but at least you're able to have some capacity for variance in what might be giving you that moment.
Right. Yep. I think that's a great example of one way, right? So, in that version you're describing, you're trying to impact that appraisal point, right? You're saying, okay, how do I evaluate this situation? How do I evaluate the person that cut me off? And I can think of them as a hazard who is dangerous or selfish. Or I could think of them as someone who might be kind of desperate because they're trying to get to the emergency room right now. And normally they make good decisions. This time they made a bad one, or they made an unsafe one for some other reason. And one of those is more favorable. It doesn't change the behavior, right? But one of those is a more favorable interpretation that's going to affect how you feel about the person.
Yeah. And in that case, right, there are like actions right at the end of your logic chain, right? There's actions that you might take, but hopefully you're not, as one of my colleagues said that he, reacted in a poor way and ended up getting punched by the mom who interacted with. And hopefully you don't get to the punch, but in that case, you're not actually like you're only internalizing, right? You're just like pissed off, or maybe beep, or maybe you flick someone off, right? But when we think about what you said about work, we have less maybe barriers to that experience of, right? You're not getting out of your car. you're in the office and it's very easy to fire off an email. It's very even easier to fire off a Slack or even just be passive aggressive. So you're actively, you're shunning this person or whatever, silent treatment. And so let's get to that like endpoint. So what do you advise? What are your hacks for when you do have that experience, if you're unable to intercede, or even if you have and it hasn't really gotten there, what do you tell people that they, how should they handle this like thing? It's going to do this.
So there's two, a couple of things I'd say. Like one, what makes the workplace so much more complicated than the highway, is that you have pre-existing relationships with the person who might have wronged you. So you no longer you lose in some ways that ability to appraise it however you want, right? I can't now assume this person's just having a bad day because I have this history with them that tells me otherwise. So that's a that is another element. Those pre-existing relationships actually mean that, to be clear, the highway is a dangerous place to engage in certain behaviors.
That's right. It's more dangerous than the office, but less, yeah, right.
But at the same time, the things you do at the office can have pretty dire consequences to your professional life if you handle them badly, right? So maybe I can give someone the finger on the road and have zero consequences. If I give someone the finger at work, depending on who it is, the consequences might be more significant. So we have to like it everything becomes more complicated there. To answer your question, I think it actually goes back to we have to start by really understanding what emotions are and why they exist. So emotions, and in this case anger, it exists to A, alert us to injustice, or and B, energize us to confront that injustice. Now I'm using a big word, especially in a workplace thing of injustice. Maybe that isn't necessarily how, but poor treatment, injustice, goal blocking, like any of those sorts of things. So essentially your anger is one of the ways your brain signals to you, hey, you are being treated badly, or hey, you are being treated unfairly, or hey, someone is trying to get in your way or slow you down, right? And frankly, I keep saying trying, maybe not even trying, but it's just that's the effect, right? That person is slowing you down. So that's the first piece. The second piece is once you've appraised something is like, yes, this is making me mad, then the next piece is all of that energy that you've kind of described here, all that sort of pent up energy that comes up. That is your body's and brain's way of energizing you to confront whatever that problem is. And all of this exists for like a real valuable evolutionary purpose, which is this is how our ancestors dealt with injustice. And it's our fight or flight system essentially kicking in so that we respond. Now, in the modern era, though, the things that maybe we would have done a million years ago aren't things we can do. We can't go start a fist fight with our coworker because we're angry.
Pick up a
So,
club.
yep, exactly. So we instead we've got to think about how we can channel that energy into something that is productive, that is pro-social, that solves the problem. And can we use the energy or the fuel that that anger provides to solve whatever the problem is that has emerged that is leading to that anger?
So you have to. You really have to go against evolution here. Is that right?
In some ways you do, yeah.
And that is that why, I mean, to me, that's why it's so freaking hard. And so what do we do? What do we do when that's bubbling up? How do you go against a millennia of evolution?
The good news is that evolution also gave us the capacity to manage our emotions in ways that our non-human ancestors didn't necessarily have, right? So we have this part of our brain called the prefrontal cortex. It's this part right up here at the front. It's the part that essentially makes us the most human, and it exists for like rational thought and reason, and ultimately that is where we control ourselves in those moments. And so we can, even though we like, if we were to really define anger at its core, we would say it's like it's the emotional desire to lash out, right? And but the important piece there is it's the desire to lash out, that we are able to control ourselves and stop ourselves from acting on it. And that actually, it's one of the interesting things if we're to just sort of reframe how people think about anger. You know, a lot of times people who do lash out are sort of perceived as strong, right? And like, you know, hey, I don't, if people step to me, I fight back. And
That's right.
right.
I don't take shit from nobody.
Yep, exactly. I will argue all day long that it is way stronger not to fight back, or that it is at least way harder not to fight back. And that real strength actually comes in taking measured responses when you are. So I think ultimately, like how we can control that evolutionary tendency to lash out is really rooted in our ability to be strategic, our ability to use reason, our willingness to practice. And so, you know, when provoked, if you are someone who says, you know what, I have a tendency to lash out, I have a tendency to yell, I have a tendency to scream, whatever, I don't want to be that any way anymore. Chances are you're not going to be able to just sort of stop on a dime, right? You're not going to be able to just tomorrow, I'm not that way. What you all honestly need to do is first do what you've already done, which is decide, this is not how I want to be. And that's actually an important part of it, is making the decision. The second part of it is recognizing that it takes effort to pause, or to find that pause button in any sort of hostile circumstance. It takes effort to find the pause button and to be able to stop yourself and say, okay, I've let this go too far. I need to walk away. I need to take a couple deep breaths. I need to ground myself. I need to do whatever. And then also recognize it's going to take time to sort of move that closer and closer to the provocation, that it you need to like acknowledge that, okay, this takes practice. And one of the things I do to sort of practice that, one of the things I advocate for, is actually do some of this work in your imagination. Like, think back on times when you've been provoked and you've lost it, and ask yourself, where could I have done things differently? Where could I have managed this differently? Where did I screw up? What is it that I said that I wish I hadn't said? How could, you know, where could I have pulled that back? Do the work. So I'm a huge sports fan. One of the things I do with my son all the time is watch his soccer games. And when we watch those soccer games, we watch focused on his behavior. We don't watch focused on the other team. We watch focused on him and his teammates, and ask ourselves, too often when we reflect on our angry experiences, we're too focused on the other people, the people we interacted with. What did they do wrong? What should they have done differently? We need to actually be willing to be introspective and interrogate our own behaviors in those circumstances.
Because you're like, you can't control what other people do. You can
Exactly.
only control what you do, right?
Yep.
Like that's, and so you have the option and the opportunity to do that. I like this visioning exercise because there is a lot of research that goes into that has shown that when you envision a different way of acting or behaving, it actually infiltrates the real world, right? It becomes your reality. And I think that's really, really compelling. Now, were you, when you got into this research, were you an angry guy? Like, did you tend to be like, you know, kind of one of those explosive guys?
There was a time when I was a relatively explosive guy. I will say this, and this is a surprise for a lot of people. I am actually I'm still an angry guy, right? And I don't explode very often. I don't yell very often. I actually look at a world where I find that there's a lot to be angry about. I just tend to be very measured in my response to those things. I literally was in a conversation earlier today where someone was describing a really bad situation to me, and at one point I had to tell her, like, please don't assume that because I'm calm right now doesn't mean that I'm like not seething with rage. Like I'm furious at what this person has done. Don't assume that because we're just having a conversation about it that I'm not irate inside. And that's not me suppressing it. It's just me, again, being quite measured in how I deal with it and express it. Now, to get to the, I think the heart of your question, though, there was a time when I was more explosive. Like there was a time when I was more of a hothead. As an athlete, I tended to be that way. As a teenager, I was that way. My poor mom could probably attest to, a lot of that. So I made no secret about of this. One of the things I wrote about in my first book, Why We Get Mad, is that I was raised by a pretty angry dad. So there was a lot of modeling around that kind of anger as well. So it's definitely been something that's been present in my life in various ways for a long time.
I hear that. I was my mom was the hothead, and that's how she would handle almost every situation is lashing out. And so that's what I learned. And it is, I am very proud of being able to manage those things at that moment and the kind of the emotional maturity of it. So what's the flip side? Okay, we just said you can't control what other people do. You can only control what you do. What happens? You're working with humans, imperfect humans, all day long, all year long, all your life. And other people are going to get angry, and they're going to be angry either next to you or at you. What is some, well-reasoned advice that you would give to folks? And I know that a lot of HR folks listen are listening in, right? And so it's like they bear the brunt of a lot of frustration and anger about things or maybe about policies. How do you handle these external entities that you don't have control over? What is it that you're going to be doing? How do I manage all that?
Yeah. So I think, a couple things that I say, interestingly, this my second book, Why We Get Mad, was actually also rooted in some social media conversations where people I knew asked me, how do you deal with this? So I did a series on TikTok of reasons why, how to deal with angry people, right? And people were really responsive to it. And so it felt like, hey, this is a thing people need help with. I think what I would start with is probably the most important thing you can do when someone is angry with you or when someone's angry around you is to think about what your goal is in that situation. What do you want to get out of that situation? And once you, and the reason this is really important is that a lot of times what people should want to get out of a situation is different from what they do. Meaning, let's you go back to the driving one, just as an obvious example.
Yes, that we've all we that we've all experienced, right?
So if someone's mad at me, right? They're honking at me, they're cutting me off, they're whatever, they give me the finger. My goal in that situation should be to get to my destination safely. Period. Right? End of story. Like that should be what I want to do is get me and my, Now, so what doesn't enter into that calculation is me getting revenge. That's not going to help me get
That's
to
not going to help you achieve your goal. It
No.
feels like that's what I need to do right now. You get pulled out of your longer term goal into the short term goal, right?
Yep, exactly. So this is what I mean by in any circumstance when someone's angry with you, think very clearly and as quickly as you can, What is it that I want to accomplish here? What is it that I need in this situation right now? And so I'm at work, someone's mad at me in a meeting. Maybe I actually screwed up. And so what I should want in that situation is to make amends. M maybe my goal is I've got to finish this project. This person's anger is not something I can really deal with right now. So what I actually need to do here is sort of put a pin in this situation and tell this person, hey, look, we're going to come back to this. For now, I've really got to do whatever, right? So think about that goal and then figure out how can I work toward that goal. This is really important because oftentimes when we stop thinking about that, we unintentionally do a bunch of stuff that may exacerbate their anger, may work against us in our ultimate goal. We end up fueling the fire in ways that we don't want to. And honestly, the thing that is so helpful to me is that so often that offers a lot of clarity to me in what is otherwise kind of an overwhelming situation, where someone's angry with me. And so for me to be able to stop and say, okay, this is what I want. How can I get there? Offers a lot of sort of clarity and comfort.
It and that tip, I always think the phrase that always resonates or I repeat in my head is eyes on the prize. That's and I use that actually in many, you're making me realize in many situations, not just dealing with angry people or adverse situations. It's okay, what am I trying to do here? So you don't get distracted and then you're working against your own interests. Right? That's the challenge. And what? Okay, so if someone's coming, I mean, I think okay, so do you have any advice for diffusing a situation?
I do. Real quick, can I comment on something that you just said that I think is really interesting? So this
Yeah,
is,
yeah.
forgive me, I can't remember what the last one was, but twice now you've described sort of like almost like mantras, like things you say in a moment. So eye on the prize is one. Forgive me, I can't remember what the previous one, but that is a really when it comes down to strategies people can use to try to manage their emotions, having some sort of mantra or phrase or thing can help, can really help you get there. And there's a ton of good research that highlights that. And so in extra points when it's a mantra that also gives you some direction on where to go, like the one you just described, like eye on the prize, give direction on what to do next. So it's really helpful in that way.
I love that.
Okay, so to answer your question about so what do you do to de-escalate? One of the things that is really important, I think, is to realize again, if your goal is to de-escalate, well, then there's a bunch of sort of small behaviors that we tend to do in heated situations that actually exacerbate the other person's anger. So, for instance, interrupting is one of those, right? Raising our voice is another one. Any kind of like minimizing their perspective, any kind of like sort of passive shaming or things like that, things that are like attacks. So I said passive, but even more aggressive attacks.
Or the Taylor Swift one was just you need to calm down.
Yes. Yep.
Right? Like, don't tell me what to fucking do, right? Like you're like, don't tell me.
Yeah, no one, the word relax has never made anybody relax, right?
Everybody for life. That's a
Never
good
once
point.
worked. Yeah. So no, I think that like typically what I encourage people to do, and none of this, I want to be super, super clear at the outset. None of this is about just like eating it, right? None of this is just about taking shit. That's not what I'm suggesting at all. What I'm saying is that if you're really mad at me, Josh, and you're yelling at me, and you're maybe you're not yelling at me because we also don't have to take abuse, right? There's a certain point where you can simply say, this is not a good time to talk and I'm out of here. But if you're, you know, mad at me and you're letting me have it in some way, the things that I might do to exacerbate that would be to argue with you, to cut you off, to raise my voice in response. That actually what might be better is for me to listen. When I do talk to, this is actually, it's called, it sounds a little weird, it's called a non-complimentary response. And so what happens is a lot of times when people are talking to each other, they tend to match each other's tone. And so if you're mad at me and you're raising your voice, well, it's natural for me to raise my voice.
Mirroring.
What actually is a way to frankly use that to manipulate people is that if I lower my voice, then I can get you to lower yours. And so if you're mad at me and I don't raise my voice and I just say, okay, I'm hearing you, Josh. I want to talk when you're done, but finish up, you know, like if I'm able to say that in a way that sort of de-escalates, then they're likely to come down a little bit. Then once, you know, again, I want to be really clear because all of this is contextual and I don't want anyone to say that I'm saying think that I'm saying like take abuse. I'm not. But at a certain point, there's an opportunity for you to speak and to say, okay, I've heard all that. Can you now give me a chance to respond? And in doing so, you're essentially saying, look, I didn't interrupt you that whole time. Now is my turn to talk, and I expect you not to interrupt me either. And again, this is assuming some level of emotional maturity on the other person. Maybe that's not a fair assumption as often as we'd like it to be. But then that gives us a chance to like actually have a conversation, potentially even sort of get on the same side of this topic, like to start thinking about it from each other's perspectives. You mentioned empathy before. This is a place where I can exhibit some of that. You know, a thing to think about, and again, this is a skill and it takes time to work on, but before when I mapped out provocation, mood at the time, stimulus, that whole model, I refer to it as diagramming an emotional incident, right? Where you kind of map out all those things. You can do that in your head about why the other person's angry, and that actually helps you figure out where you might be able to intervene. So if they're angry because they misunderstand something, well, then we can clarify that. If they are, this isn't really my place, but if they are angry because, hey, look, they're under a ton of stress, it's not, I can't fix that stress for them, but I can empathize, right? I can acknowledge that, and that might be a way of intervening. So sometimes, that gives us a sense for where the problem is from their perspective, helps us sort of see things a little bit differently, and then helps us figure out how to navigate it.
So many interesting insights, very applicable. And all I can say is, I'm pissed that we don't have more time to talk.
Am too. No, I get that.
Oh my gosh, so interesting. Emotion Hacks, out now by Ryan Martin. Find it wherever books are sold. You can also get free anger content at Anger Professor all over the interwebs, all the social media. So Ryan Martin, psychologist, anger researcher, thank you so much for sharing a little bit of your deep, deep well of wisdom. I feel like I know where I have to do some work and I know where I've made progress, and I can't wait to read the book.
Thank you so much for having me, Josh. This has been fantastic. Love talking to you.
Thanks for listening to Great Mondays Radio. Hey, if you want to be a guest, head over to radio.greatmondays.com. And if you think this episode was interesting and your friends and fans would enjoy it, please share on social media. And if you want to get more people to understand the power of company culture in business today, please rate and review Great Mondays Radio on your podcast feed. It really helps us reach more people. If you want to hear more candid conversations with culture leaders, subscribe to Great Mondays Radio. I'd love to connect with you. Find me on LinkedIn at AKA Josh Levine, on YouTube at Great Mondays. And you can always email me, josh@greatmondays.com. Find out more about our work with hypergrowth technology and social enterprise organizations at greatmondays.com. I'm Josh Levine. Thanks for listening to Great Mondays Radio.